Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Monday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, taking time out this Monday to begin with some inspiration, to talk a little bit about current events, and to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is March 7th, 2011. I want to thank everyone for joining me today. I feel as if today is a really sunny day. I hope it is sunny in your part of the world. When you smile, the world smiles with you. And I would like to invite you to go onto the Blog Talk Radio show and click friend, favorite. You can download the archives. And we have now four shows going on. Today, we each Monday at noon, we're studying the Organon and learning it a little bit about what's going on in current events in health news. And on Wednesday, we have organic gardening. When Kaviraj is not traveling and out of town, he's with us, teaching us about how to apply homeopathy in your garden. And Dr. Robert Brook, North Carolina State University professor and environmental scientist, comes on with some scientific point of view, what's happening as a plant pathologist perspective. And then on Thursday, we have Vaccinations and Your Rights with Alan Phillips at noon also. On the first Thursday of each month, we have Greg Glazer come in and speak about constitutional law. And our most recent show is the Sunday Night Meditation that starts at 11 p.m. I call it midnight because by the time the night is over, it is midnight. So I invite you to join any of those shows, whichever is your favorite. Click on it and get the RSS feed. Get it to your iTunes. Blog Talk Radio provides so many modes of downloading and getting this information. There's also a daily newspaper called the Homeopath Daily, where homeopaths who are on Twitter tell us information about what's going on locally in their region, about remedies, just general information, and lots of health articles. So it's an online newspaper. Just go to bit.ly/homeopathsdaily. I'm encouraging people to sign up. It's not too late. For the 2011 Homeopathic Conference, it's called Homeopathy Meets the World, an international forum of teachers, cases, and results, and it promises to be a spectacular world-class event from a roster of speakers that reads like a who's who of world-class teachers to the introduction of the 21st century technologies like the worldwide webcasting. The National Center for Homeopathy has been doing that lately, and they are magnificent programs, very enjoyable and educational. There's going to be a video report from Africa, Haiti, and India. You're not going to want to miss this one. Go to www.homeopathic.org, and I'm sure there's a great big banner across the front page that'll take you to the exact link. The speakers over a time span of 3 days begins with a Friday morning webcast featuring George Bethulkis and Jeremy Scher. Saturday and Sunday include a wide variety of presenters representing a broad spectrum of homeopathic thinking from Hahnemannian teacher and practitioner
Dr. Joe Kellerstein to Anne Vervaeche, who has the vital approach from studying the sensation method. Each day there are going to be many, many programs to select from. For instance, there will be a program on coughs and their homeopathic treatment. Common dental first aid issues. Is homeopathy safe during pregnancy? How to think like a homeopath. Homeopathy for anxiety, a surprisingly effective approach. And I want to make note that I believe it's Dr. Duchiant put up a brand new group on Homeopathy World Community specifically about this issue, about anxiety disorder. And there will be a program at the NCH, the National Center for Homeopathy annual conference, about confusion to clarity, learning which symptoms makes all the difference. And of course, the venerable homeopathic first aid. Everyone needs that kit in their home. I want to also thank the sponsor for the show, that's Roger Van Zandvoort, for believing in Homeopathy World Community and supporting our network. If you go to www.completedynamics.com, you will be able to download the program so that you, on your own computer, you can start studying the Materia Medica. Of course, that is absolutely free, and it's a great way to get started. If you ever want to get in touch with Roger, he is on Facebook also doing all sorts of rubric analysis for everyone to learn. In addition, I keep forgetting to tell you that we do have Homeopathy World Community on Facebook as well, on the fan page. Take a look at that. We have a couple of announcements, and I want to thank Iman for putting up his quotes, usually historical quotes, which are very enlightening. So that is the introduction, and again, I want to thank Roger for providing his program to the world and the professional version for homeopaths, where they can put in their analysis and their case management. And I think that's about it for our introduction and housekeeping. I do hope to see you in Virginia. For inspiration today, I found Tanya Starnett on the Homeopathy World Community had written this short line by Winston Churchill. However beautiful the strategy, you should occasionally look at the results. This is really a broad statement, and we might think we're doing the right thing. We might think the strategy looks like it's going to work. But even an artist who's painting steps back to look at the broader view, to take a conceptual analysis of what is actually happening, to distance yourself a little bit from the involvement that you have in whatever it is that you're working on, so that you're not making mistakes, so that you are getting a clear objective perspective on the work that you're doing. Dr. Hahnemann said, and this is a quote that Iman has provided for us, there are three errors that we are liable to make. First is the selection of the improper remedy. Second, the improper potency. And third, not letting the remedy act a sufficient length of time. And that's going to be part of our studies for today. I'm going to take a quick look at the chat room. And we have an empty chat room today, so maybe people are listening and not thinking that they would like to participate in comments. In the news, we have an article called Patent Woes Threaten Drug Firms by Duff Wilson. And he says that at the end of November, Pfizer stands to lose $10 billion dollars a year revenue stream when the patent on its blockbuster cholesterol drug Lipitor expires and cheaper generics begin to cut into the company's huge sales. So there's going to be a loss for this pharmaceutical company, and I'm wondering exactly what will be the strategy that they will take Will there be a new and improved version? We shall see. This is, the loss poses a daunting challenge for Pfizer, he says, one shared by nearly every major pharmaceutical company. This year alone, because of patent expirations, the drug industry will lose control over more than 10 mega medicines, whatever that is, whose combined annual sales have neared $50 billion. That number just is way beyond the scope of my understanding what $1 billion could be, but it's a lot. And they're saying, he's saying something about a reversal in the industry that just a few years ago was the world's most profitable business sector is under pressure to reinvent itself and shed its dependence on blockbuster drugs. It casts a spotlight on the problems that drug companies now face, a drought of big drug breakthroughs and research discoveries, pressures from users, and the government to hold down prices, regulatory vigilance and government investigations, and thousands of layoffs in research and development. So they have to reinvent themselves. All of the companies are having a difficult time, and people on the ground are really not interested as much as they were in believing that taking a pill is going to be the answer to all of their woes. And I think people are becoming rather skeptical about taking a drug as a solution to their lifelong problems instead of investigating a little bit further what they can do as a responsible human being for their own health, their family's health, by changing their lifestyle and taking care of their basic needs more than running in the treadmill of the workaday world. And so this is an interesting article that everybody can take a look at. And what are they going to do with the stockpiles of medicines that they've got? And they have a big problem on their hands. And of course, we know that there are a lot of fraudulent activity going on in the industry. They have fraud and bribery and kickbacks and investigations and drug removals from the market and a lot of these criminal fines that have been going on recently to the tune of $2.3 billion settlement for Pfizer in their latest activity. So we will see changes. And then the second part of our health news, Troubles of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, Start with Defining It, by David Tuller. These are two articles in the New York Times. When reports emerged 30 years ago that young gay men were suffering from a rare form of pneumonia and cancer, public health investigators scrambled to understand what appeared to be a deadly immune disorder. What were the symptoms? Who was most susceptible? What kinds of infections were markers of the disease? So they begin with the epidemiological studies to find out exactly what is going on in the situation. And they create a set of criteria that simultaneously include people with the illness and exclude those without it. With AIDS, investigators soon recognized that injection drug users, hemophiliacs, and other demographic groups were also at risk, and the case definition evolved over time to incorporate lab evidence of immune dysfunction and other refinements based on scientific advances. So this Dr. Andrew Moss, a professor of epidemiology at the University of Emeritus, professor of epidemiology at the University of California, San Francisco, and an early AIDS investigator, said if you recognize something is happening, you need a case definition so you can count it. You need to know whether the numbers are going up and or down or whether treatment and prevention work. And if you have a bad case definition, then it's difficult to figure out what's going on. So it's like what we began this show today. We need to take a step back and reevaluate and understand if your premise is correct, if you're starting off at the right point, if you have a good hypothesis, and if you're working with the facts on the ground. or have you made a wrong turn? Even one little measurement off can take you far afield from where you need to be. And any person at NASA would tell you that. So once a disease can be recognized reliably through lab tests, creating an accurate case definition becomes easier. But when an ailment has no known cause and its symptoms are subjective, as with chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and other diseases whose characteristics and even existence have been contested, competing case definitions are almost inevitable. And we know in homeopathy that we are always working on solid ground. We are looking at the individual, at the symptoms presented, and we're matching that with an energy in the universe that is similar. We do not have to put a label on it. We do not have to say this is a specific category of disease. Of course, we can use that information in our research and understanding when a complex of symptoms creates a type of disease disorder, but we don't always need the label. A new study of chronic fatigue syndrome has highlighted how competing case definitions can lead to an epidemiological Rashomon, he calls it. What you see depends on who's doing the looking, and has stoked a fierce debate among researchers and patient advocates on both sides of the Atlantic, which means that the researchers and epidemiologists are not standing together. They're not unified in their definitions, in their understanding of what makes a labeled condition. So if you're talking about apples and oranges, you're going to have a hard time putting it all together. And this was a study that was published in The Lancet that reported exercise and cognitive behavioral therapy could help people with the illness. Advocates and some leading experts dismissed the findings and said the author's case definition was largely to blame. So here is their infighting. Here is a problem with understanding what to do with a person who has a specific set of symptoms. If this cognitive behavioral therapy can help people, why do we have to go back and find a reason why it wouldn't work if the person had specific symptoms that were being alleviated? And using this type of therapy would certainly reduce stress and help holistically the individual rather than relying on some kind of a drug therapy. And there's a lot more to this article. Take a look at it. I'll tell you the name of it again is Troubles of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, starting with defining it. And we know that this is at a prevalent epidemic level today. People say that they have fibromyalgia with the certain points in their body that are very sensitive, aches, pains, disabilities. Some people can't even get out of bed. And now we're going to start our study today of the Organon. I think that is what we have lined up for the next part of the show. We're going to be talking about aphorism number 171. We've been talking previously about, Hahnemann has been talking in the Organon of Medicine about dealing with acute illness and how we approach that as a homeopath, and what are the steps that we must take to know that we're on the right track, that we're looking at the individual in a holistic perspective and in an individualized perspective. And now he's going to be starting to talk about something very interesting, aphorism number 171. In non-venereal chronic diseases, he states, those most commonly, therefore, that arise from sora, we often require in order to effect a cure, to give several anti-soric remedies in succession, every successive one being homeopathically chosen, in consonance with the group of symptoms remaining after completion of the action of the previous remedy. So we can hearken back to what Iman said regarding allowing the remedy to fully act. And here Hahnemann is intimating that there will probably be a series of remedies to clear the patient of a deep-seated disease that was not brought on by a recent contagion with venereal disease. And most importantly, that we must have an extreme sense of patience to wait for each remedy to thoroughly act. This is different than when we're dealing with acute disease, when we see a rapid response toward cure, where there should be immediate action to save a person's life, to get them out of their panic and very importantly acute condition, whether it is an accident or something. We need to get them in a better state immediately. We cannot just linger and wait. And in those cases, sometimes we do change the dose or change the remedy more quickly. Hahnemann has demonstrated in repeated experiments that acute infectious diseases could be prevented and cured by applying this, the law of similars. This held true for all acute illnesses. However, it did not always work for him in the chronic diseases, and this is what he's talking about. Hahnemann observed that long-term chronic diseases kept recurring even after he would see an initial improvement from his treatment, or he would keep giving a new remedy and he would see improvement, but still he didn't see complete annihilation. It didn't go away forever. He didn't see the type of cure that he was looking for. And therefore, he said there's something going on, and he had to investigate further. In 1817, he concluded that chronic diseases were often due to a latent infection acquired in childhood. And since the infection was characterized by an itchy eruption, he called it sora, from the Greek word sora, itch. Or there's a soric miasm, meaning impurity or infection. So it's an itchy infection such as scabies. He had recognized that a whole new set of medicines were needed to conquer this chronic disease, and he set out to develop new therapies or therapeutics, as he had done with the acute infectious diseases, which were in the previous aphorisms we discussed. So Hahnemann had identified two latent chronic infections or miasms, such as psychosis, which is the gonorrheal infection, and syphilis. These two were later confirmed by bacteriological investigations. In introducing the miasmatic theory, Hahnemann left the purely phenomenon of homeopathic approach of prescribing on the basis of the totality of symptoms in favor of a causative hypothesis. And these are the words of Manfred Mueller now in an article that he has written. In chronic diseases, he decided the remedy had to match more than the manifest symptoms. These diseases were to be treated on the basis of the apparent as well as latent symptoms, which could be identified only by understanding the symptoms of the entire population that had been afflicted by the miasm. This new approach required the identification of the chronic miasmatic disease by its cause. The cause was important because it aided in identifying the disease and unmasking the latent symptoms before they would manifest. Hahnemann had demonstrated in repeated experiments that acute infectious diseases could be prevented and cured by applying the law of similars, and that is relating to acute disease. This held true for all acutes. However, it didn't always work for the chronic, and this was where he had this block and limitation to complete cure. Hahnemann observed that long-term chronic diseases recurred following an initial improvement after treatment, and this he stated numerous times, that he would see improvement, but then it would be something what we might call a relapse or a reoccurrence. By 1817, that's what he came across in his research and studies. The root cause in chronicity of allergic disorders is the miasmatic blockage. So this is for folks who have allergies, and it's related to SORA, which is responsible for hypersensitivity and reactivity in response to environmental stimuli. And therefore, it is thought of to find an anti-soric remedy. The anti-soric remedies are those medicines which have the potential to remove the entire syndrome of the soric miasm, because they are similar to its entire disease process in human sufferers. In order to remove all the symptoms of a chronic disease, it is necessary to remove the cause. And a quote from Herring states, "When the leaves and branches of a weed are cut without removing the root, the weed only grows again. In the same way, if the root of the miasm is not removed, the symptoms will surely return." And this is what we're calling, he's finding out what is it that's the cause for the patient to constantly have a recurrence and not a complete state of health. And we've talked in the past about a number of the aphorisms that deal with sensitivities, whether it is an age when they're sensitive to environmental stimuli or dietary indiscretions and things like that, that there was an underlying state that could present itself at any time. And Hahnemann and his compatriots struggled with patients that they were not getting well from because of these chronic non-venereal diseases. And he wondered why some who had perhaps incorrect living, the environmental pollutants or stimuli, food indiscretions would cause so much upheaval. You would think that the individual had vitalized their immune system and would throw off any kinds of indiscretions, but this was not the case. Hahnemann writes in the book, The Chronic Diseases, that he was healing idiopathic diseases such as scarlet fever, whooping cough, croup, psychosis, autumnal dysenteries, pleurisy, and typhus contagious epidemics just by using the homeopathic remedies that he had in his kit. And remember, he had a limited number as compared to what we have today. And he complained always of having too few proven remedies available and foreseeing the future that our remedy selections would grow. He never rested on his laurels and could not be content and fall into a state of hopelessness, which is near the end of when you have no resources at your disposal, and he would keep struggling on. The non-venereal diseases caused him great distress when the acute disease moved to a rapid cure. What, he must have asked himself, was happening? There appeared to be a block in movement toward curative action. This was Hahnemann's discovery. At the age of 72, Hahnemann recorded that the disease seemed to go away with the proper remedy selection, yet it returned with renewed vigor, seasonally, annually, and even with more and more complaints than the original presentation of the disease. And an eruption of itch that was suppressed, so if there's any type form that you put on your skin to suppress an itch in any way, would continue to, he says that it's not going to help. It's going to continue to appear in one way or another. And the initially healthy person, so if a person was basically healthy but they had something on their skin that was itching, you could say that this is a robust individual. But once you started the road to suppression, the individual would be on the road to decline. And that might take years, and it might be quite insidious. It might be a slow decline. Most cutaneous eruptions, which Willen distinguishes with care and labeled their own names, such as a wart on the finger, a Metis tumor, a malformation of the fingernail, swellings of the bones and curvature of the spine, even softening of the bones and deformities, including blood disorders and night sweats, dryness of the skin, and diarrhea, which today we might label Crohn's disease or irritable bowel syndrome, and constant constipation and other kinds of bowel problems, inflammations and ulcers, weight disorders. Well, we have a big, that's a pun, a large amount of weight disorders and at epidemic proportions, and other changes in our sensory organs, both early in life and later, originate from, I'm going to call it this spore, S-P-O-R-E, as if something would be able to be spread and sprouted like a mushroom spore, like a fungus, but not specifically that, but just the way that it can proliferate. A definite change in symptoms is an indication to retake the case, he says, and to give a new remedy. The new prescription should be started in the lowest degrees, and if there are folks out there who are using the LM potencies, you're going to start with an LM1 and move slowly up to LM7. And the potency is raised in a serial fashion to higher degrees. This is the method that Manfred Mueller is using when he does. Actually, this is from David Little now, who is teaching about what to do in caring for the patient and managing the case. And he obviously uses the LM potencies. He says it does not matter if the previous remedy reached an ultra-high potency. One always starts a new remedy with the lower potencies and works upward through the scale stage by stage. And we are talking about aphorism number 171. I will go back and repeat that again so we can refresh where we are. Aphorism number 171 states, in non-venereal chronic diseases, those most commonly, therefore, that arise from SORA, we often require, in order to effect a cure, to give several anti-soric remedies in succession, every successive one being homeopathically chosen in consonance with the group of symptoms remaining after completion of the action of the previous remedy. Thus, you can see that you're going to start with one remedy that is based on the similimum, based on the symptoms that are presenting, and make a good selection there, and go through all of, as David Little would say, the LM potencies, slowly climb up the scale of potencies until you're sure that every bit of this presentation is gone, and take your time. Let the cure for each one be complete and full. And then you're going to move to the next one based on what are the new presenting symptoms for that specific case. And we're going to go back to what David Little is talking about here. In Aphorism 171, Hahnemann notes that a new remedy is often chosen by the remaining symptoms after the previous remedy has accomplished all it can. And I have just reread that for you. He says in chronic diseases, quote, in chronic diseases, there are not venereal, therefore those most usually arising from SORA, one often needs to employ several anti-soric remedies in succession to bring about a cure, each to be homeopathically selected in accordance with the result of an examination of the group of symptoms that remain after the previous means has completed its action. And that is a rewording of the aphorism number 171 by O'Reilly in the Organon of Medical Arts. Sometimes certain symptoms remain or old symptoms appear that are not well suited to the present remedy. This is a different situation than the appearance of new symptoms caused by new factors affecting the case or the usual partial similimums. A partial similimum meaning that you didn't get the entire case right on target. It wasn't a bullseye. You just got part of the similimum, part of the similars in your selection of remedy. So certain symptoms remain, or in other words, some of the symptoms are not going away, or in fact, going back historically in Herring's Law, some of the old symptoms begin to appear and present themselves. As long as a remedy causes the old symptoms to reduce in number and decline in strength, says David Little, one can rest assured that the case is progressing in the right direction. Sometimes one remedy is not sufficient to cure a protracted degenerative disorder, especially those based on layers and complex miasms. Under these circumstances, one must determine the proper time to change the remedy. And a quote from Dr. James Kent says, when the demonstration is clear that the present remedy has done all it is capable of doing, and this demonstration cannot be made until much higher potencies than usually made have been tried, then the time is present for the next prescription. To change to the next remedy becomes a ponderous problem, and what shall it be? And I think most everyone has this question in their mind, because we know that homeopathy is an art as well as a science. You have to be in tune with the individual. You have to be in constant communication to know what's happening in their life, how their disease is progressing, and whether they're feeling well, whether they're coping with whatever symptoms are slowly going away. What should we do when there is a change of symptoms not affected by a previous remedy? And he answers, at this time, the homeopaths should ask themselves the following questions. What is the cause of the change in symptoms? Are they produced by a new, exciting, or fundamental cause? Is the patient doing anything different that could be causing new symptoms? Is this a dissimilar layer of symptoms coming to the surface after the removal of a previous layer? How do we know the difference? We have so many questions in our mind how to distinguish what is happening, because an individual is very dynamic. Sometimes they don't do the exact same thing every single day. Sometimes there's a seasonal change. Maybe they're starting to eat a new fruit that's in season, or their aunt gave them a box of cheese, or they went to the beach and they were in contact with something other than what they normally are. There's so many reasons for why there might be a change in dynamics within the individual. Or is this now the fact that it is the end of the action of the remedy that has been given, and so we're going to see something present itself that's completely new? And I'm going to just take a quick look. We do have a couple of guests and no comments. If you have any comments, I will check the chat and just give a quick hello and let them know that I see that there are folks who are listening today. There are three major reasons for a change in symptoms. For instance, an artificial change caused by an inappropriate medicine, the appearance of new exciting and fundamental causes, and the arousal of deeper, dissimilar layers of illness during the process of cure. So we see that a homeopath doesn't always make the exact target, just hit the bullseye of the right remedy. This is going to match everything that's being presented. And sometimes they select either a wrong remedy that doesn't match at all, or a partial similimum that may be artificial, that could artificially change the nature of the symptom pattern. At this time, the symptoms produced by the remedy and the remaining natural symptoms must be combined and a better medicine prescribed. So we're still now taking the totality of symptoms, except now we're taking the totality of symptoms of what has changed because of giving a remedy. What is the combination now of the natural symptoms from the natural disease and the symptoms from the remedy, the medicine, the drug? This should regularize the vital force and move the case toward cure. And this is the beauty of homeopathy, that we are able to adapt and fine-tune and take a step back and reevaluate and change every single day what is being done. It's not like take this pill once or three times a day for 10 days and then let me see what's going on. We can know right away what's going on. So if the patient receives 2, 3, or 4 inappropriate remedies in a row, then the natural symptom pattern may be seriously altered. Such a muddled case can only be restored to health by an experienced homeopath. For this reason, the greatest care must be applied to each and every prescription. So homeopaths, you should always find a homeopath who has a tremendous amount of experience and is able to discern what is the proper remedy for the patient, and that they are communicative with the patient and will assist and guide and let them know what is happening in the case. Sometimes the patient comes in contact with new causes that may change the symptom pattern. Perhaps the patient suffers from a virulent acute disease that produces a sequel. Maybe the patient becomes infected with a chronic miasm, such as psoriasis and psychosis, as we previously described, that they did not in the past ever suffer. There may be a new befallment, like a physical or a mental trauma, that changes the nature of the symptoms. So we see that it could be that a person has an accident or comes in contact with a contagious disease, or a person who has a contagious disease, or they have another kind of just an acute illness, like a cold. And all of these things can be changing the nature of the pattern as what we're looking at. And the third reason for a change in the symptom pattern is the appearance of old, dissimilar disease layers as the reversal of symptoms takes place under a curative treatment. And this is really a positive change. As Hahnemann was stating, you're going to need to do a number of remedies in sequential order based on the presenting symptoms, giving yourself plenty of time to allow each remedy to act properly and curatively. And then after what appears to be healing, there's a relapse or a recurrence, or some new symptoms appear, which would be the new layer, and figuring out what is the remedy to take care of the new symptom picture. These deeper layers may represent old, unresolved disorders and suppressions and the activation of latent states. Thusly, we may be taking care of something from the historical past of the individual, other kinds of illnesses, traumas, accidents, contagious diseases. Deeper layers also appear when one-sided disease states begin to resolve. If the new symptoms are found in the materia medica under the same remedy, there is no need to change the prescription. So these one-sided illnesses, disease states, typically in Western medicine, a doctor might say, well, that's a localized illness. You only have this rash in this one place, or you only have this wart in this one place. But in essence, it is not really truly localized. It is part of the whole disease, which is part of the entire body function and immune system and the vital force. And therefore, it is just like the tip of an iceberg. It's just presenting you a little bit of information without seeing the majority of the illness, which is underground, which now during this procedure, which he is presenting to us today, is that you have to go step by step to uncover these layers. When these symptoms are not similar to the remedy under employment, the case must be retaken and a new simillimum administered. In order to comprehend this process, one must have some understanding of how layers and complex disorders develop. And again, we return to the introductory quote that we need to step back and take a good look at what's happening for the individual. We're going to move on to aphorism number 172. A similar difficulty in the way of the cure occurs from the symptoms of the disease being too few, a circumstance that deserves our careful attention, for by its removal, almost all the difficulties that can lie in the way of this most perfect of all possible modes of treatment, except that its apparatus of known homeopathic medicines is still incomplete, are removed. So here in aphorism number 172, Hahnemann states that a case can be really hard to figure out if you don't have enough symptoms to go by. And that can be tough for anyone. And it deserves as much careful attention. And he's saying that the part of the reason, in parentheses, he says, that their knowledge at the time of homeopathic medicines was incomplete, that they had maybe 100 remedies, and they knew them like the back of their hand. It was part of their being. It was their best friend, and they could recognize the face of their best friend. But when something presented before them where they didn't recognize the picture, the eyes, nose, ears, and mouth, they didn't know how to discern what that picture was because they didn't have the information about other remedies, then this caused them some frustration, most likely, that was going to be a difficult case. And in fact, today we have similar problems when people say, I'm really fine, except that I just have this little red rash here, and that's all that's wrong with me. Obviously, that's not enough to go by. You need to get a complete analysis, a complete case intake to be able to do a good analysis and figure out what is the proper remedy. Moving on to aphorism number 173, the only diseases that seem to have but few symptoms and on that account to be less amenable to cure are those which may be termed one-sided, because they display only one or two principal symptoms which obscure almost all the others. They belong chiefly to the class of chronic diseases. So here he's telling us this is a big problem. We've got a chronic disease, something that we can see only the tip of the iceberg. We can see one or two symptoms, which he's coining one-sided. They're only displaying just that, and it's hiding everything else that's underneath. If these things are covering up this, whatever those one-sided symptoms are, they're covering up the entire layer of the chronic disease that's hidden underneath that he wants to uncover with this layered method. Excuse me. Aphorism number 174. Their principal symptom may be either an internal complaint, for instance, a headache of many years' duration, a diarrhea of long standing, an ancient cardialgia, etc., or it may be an affection more of an external kind. Diseases of the latter character are generally distinguished by the name of local maladies. So I'm going to review that aphorism number 174 again. He's saying that when you're talking about these one-sided diseases, that the principal symptom could be either an internal complaint. So somebody comes in and says, I've had this migraine since I was a teenager. Or somebody with irritable bowel says, I don't remember when the last time I didn't have this diarrhea problem. And they tried every kind of dietary change, and still the diarrhea remains, and maybe from anxiety, who knows why, or a problem with their heart. And it may be an affection more of an external kind. So you've got two different kinds, something that's internal or something that's actually showing on the skin. Diseases of the latter character, which are the ones that are external, he coins as local maladies. So he's kind of just defining terms here. And then he goes on to aphorism number 175. In one-sided diseases of the first kind, those are the internal complaints, it is often to be attributed to the medical observer's want of discernment that he does not fully discover the symptoms actually present, which would enable him to complete the sketch of the portrait of the disease. Thus, it seems that Hahnemann is saying here that if you've got somebody who's got what we call a one-sided disease, and it comes as an internal expression to somebody saying it's this constipation, diarrhea, headache, problem with palpitations, whatever it might be, it's something that the person actually feels deeply in their being, and they could certainly provide for you considerable details about the frequency, the intensity, the qualities, the sensations of this type of malady, and therefore you would be able to have a good solid picture in order to make a prescription or a homeopathic remedy selection on the similimum. And then he says in aphorism number 176, there are, however, still a few diseases which, after the most careful initial examination, and he refers us to aphorisms 84 through 98, where he teaches us in depth how to do a full exam and take a case, and I recommend you go back and listen to the older shows to get that information, that present but one or two severe violent symptoms, while all the others are but indistinctly perceptible. So he's saying that it is a possibility that a person can present, even after a careful examination, with only one or two violent symptoms. I suppose he's going to tell us we're going to have to take that the information that's given to us. And so in aphorism number 177, he states, in order to meet most successfully such a case as this, with just a few presenting severe symptoms, which is a very rare occurrence, we are in the first place to select, guided by these few symptoms, the medicine which in our judgment is the most homeopathically indicated. Thusly, Hahnemann is telling us he doesn't come across this type of patient very often. Probably when he comes into the room and speaks to the patient, they are open to telling him whatever it is he needs to discern the remedy and to really understand what's going on with that individual, their sickness, their disease, their symptom picture, the dynamics that they have in their environment, in their relationships, with work, with their career, with money, with whatever it is, he's able to get all of the both the emotional, physical, mental picture in order to make a selection. So he's saying most to find this happening where you only get one or two symptoms of a severe nature is rather rare. And aphorism number 178 will be probably near the end of our show today. It will no doubt sometimes happen, quoting Hahnemann, that this medicine, selected in strict observance with the homeopathic law, furnishes the similar artificial disease suited for the annihilation of the malady present, and this is much more likely to happen when these few morbid symptoms are very striking, decided, uncommon, and peculiarly distinctive and characteristic. Therefore, he's telling us when we come across a situation where someone is presenting with only this one or two symptoms, and they are so intense, severe, violent, striking, there's no question that it's an important piece of information that's going to direct you straight away to what remedy needs to be given. You're going to see actually annihilation of the disease. And because you're going to be able to provide what he calls the similar artificial disease, which comes from the similarly selected remedy. And that is, let's see, we've got we still have more time, a couple more minutes to go. So 179. More frequently, however, the medicine first chosen in such a case will be only partially, that is to say, not exactly suitable, and there was no considerable number of symptoms to guide to an accurate selection. So here, if we were a cheerleading crowd, if we were in the audience listening, and we had just read 178, and we're all going, yay, that's an easy one. They just give us one or two symptoms. We go straight to the books. We find out what it is, and we give it, and everything's great. The person gets better, and even the disease malady is totally annihilated. Whoopee! And then he drops aphorism number 179 and says, well, it's not going to happen that way. More frequently, the first remedy chosen in such a case is only going to be a partial similimum. It's not going to cover exactly. It's not going to hit all the P's and Q's. It's not going to dot the I's. It's not going to get everything because, as we were just stating, if this is an image of an iceberg, you've only got a little piece of the puzzle. You don't have everything else. And so if you don't have the complete picture, you're not going to be able to address it and answer it completely. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening today. I talked on and on and on all by myself. I hope you didn't feel as if this was a monotonous drone to my voice and you were able to reap some knowledge and information from today's show. And I'm going to just about say goodbye for today and end about a minute early. So thank you very, very much for listening. Until I want to remind everybody that there is going to be a gardening show on Wednesday, and there will be at noon, there will be a vaccination show with Alan Phillips on Thursday, and then again, Sunday night is midnight meditation. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with host Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to take your Organon off the shelf and read it.